Well, good morning to you, Kelly, here, and the third day of June, and we did have Bill Clinton in town, which caused a lot of excitement, and he gave a speech at Pocatello Middle School. So a little bit of something we don't normally get around here, which is called excitement. But good to have him here. And anyway, we have some massive flooding over in Texas, and they're calling it biblical amounts of rain that have come down. So we will get to that. And a little bit on the fact that, believe it or not, California's tied between Hillary and General Sanders. Isn't that exciting? So what happens if Hillary beats the general, or the general beats Hillary? Wouldn't that be crazy? So I've got actually the whole speech of Clinton, which I don't think anybody's interested in hearing, except maybe Frankie, 38 minutes. I'm looking for a little clip, a little montage of this thing. All right, so I'll get you a clip later. Let's get, though, to a little bit on this flood. It is just absolutely devastating. And there were, I believe, 5 soldiers that came up missing in this flood as well. So real bad news. And they're going to have rain through the weekend. And it's just been an everyday thing. It has been almost every day raining, or off and on sporadically, for months and months and months, for a year. Off and on, just one flood after another. It's really something else. Here you go.
West of here, around Killeen, Fort Hood Military Post. Officials there are saying that 3 soldiers have died. 6 others are missing after a transport vehicle overturned in floodwaters near that base. So it's not something that's just here in the Rosenberg Richmond area. 3 additional soldiers, they were rescued from the floodwaters. They're in stable condition. People are state military, local agencies, they're still looking at this hour to try and find the remaining 6 missing soldiers. And we're going to stay on top of the story. We're showing you pictures there, and you can see the tires of this vehicle, really all we can see. So unfortunately, this has turned deadly, the flooding in Texas.
Yeah, to say the least. To say the least, it's turned devastating. And there have been, I think up to yesterday, there were 7 people that had died. And now with this, it's just unbelievable. Let me see if I can get you a little bit more of this flood. All right, so, well, that's a pretty short clip. All right, here's one that's a little bit longer for you. And this is from KXAN.
Concentration.
Yeah, hold on just a second here. Anyway, hope you're ready for the weekend. And why wouldn't you be?
Certainly starts.
All right, so hold on a second. This is, here's just on the flooding in Texas from the Weather Channel.
More devastating news coming out of Texas. 5 Fort Hood soldiers are dead and 4 are missing after floodwaters overturned their army truck on Thursday. Here's a look at aerials from earlier this week, and you can see Houston is underwater, and it's not just Houston. 31 counties across the state have been declared a disaster, and when you look at these pictures, you can see why. More rain still in the forecast. Now, the concentration of the rain, that is going to be basically along the Gulf. So it is starting to shift further east, and eventually it will diminish through the weekend. But We have pockets of heavy rain setting up between Houston and Corpus Christi today. The situation certainly starts to get better by Saturday. Sunday, the showers pretty much diminish. But here's a look at additional rainfall we could see. Remember, when you already have a saturated ground, any little bit will matter, and it will exacerbate those flooding concerns. So College Station, half an inch. Houston, you could see up to another inch.
All right, so between, I think, 1 and 3 inches throughout that Houston area. Now, here is on that, and this is from last night, KXAN.
A training exercise turns deadly, and now the race is on to find those still missing. Three Fort Hood soldiers are dead and three others injured. But the search continues tonight for six who are still missing.
The soldiers were in a tactical vehicle swept away at a low water crossing on the post this morning during a training exercise. KXAN's Amanda Brandeis is live at Fort Hood with what we have learned tonight. Amanda, what can you tell us?
Shannon and Robert, civilian search crews have been at Owl Creek Park throughout the day searching for these soldiers, but they suspended their search operation several hours ago, and park rangers have since closed off that park. Now, our last update from Fort Hood was that their crews would continue searching until they felt it was no longer safe. Right now, Fort Hood is providing few details on what led up to the accident, but we are learning the soldiers were doing some sort of training in a heavily wooded and rugged terrain. 12 soldiers were on the vehicle at the time of the accident. The three soldiers who lost their lives were recovered from the water downstream from the vehicle. Another three soldiers were rescued from the water and were told they're in stable condition. And six soldiers remain missing. Local and state agencies have been helping in the search using aircraft, canine search teams, heavy ground equipment, and Swift Water Rescue watercraft. Now, the name of those three soldiers who were killed will not be released until 24 hours after their next of kin have been notified. Robert.
Well, Amanda, this is one of the last places anyone would expect to see something like this happen.
That's exactly right, Robert. It's been on the minds of all of us throughout the day, but right now Fort Hood just has not given us a lot of information on what kind of training they were doing or what led up to the accident. But a Fort Hood spokesman tells NBC News that they train in all sorts of weather, and today, unfortunately, something went terribly wrong. Reporting live from Fort Hood.
All right, so kind of a noisy video there, but I do have a few more clips on the weather. It's just kind of astounding how these, you know, we're talking about all kinds of different weird things, but one of the things that's been affected here is, and there's a clip from AccuWeather, there's herds of cattle that have basically been swept along that they've tried to save. There's a clip here. It wouldn't really mean anything to play it for you, but it's a flood full of cows just basically trying not to drown. And then there are other clips where they took horses and led them through the floods as well. So, it just created a lot of heartache. And, you know, I mean, the amount of rain coming down around Houston has been just, absolutely just epic. And it is, you know, Houston flooded, I think you recall, a few months ago. So it's just a real tragedy, though, with those soldiers. Just looking at these other things, mandatory evacuations in Brazoria County. I think there are 31 counties that have been declared disaster areas. And all right, so we'll come back, and I've got a little bit of NBA for you. Kelly O'Connell, first game of the NBA last night, championship on the 3rd day of June. We'll be right back. 6:15. All right, so just a little bit more on this weather for you. Here's from Watchin' News.
Threatening to aggravate already swollen rivers, deluge homes, and force more evacuations, a new round of storms dumped more rain on flood-hit parts of Texas. On Thursday morning, the National Weather Service issued a flash flood warning for the central parts of the state. Most of Texas was placed on a flash flood watch due to slow-moving storm system expected to linger through the weekend. Mobilizing state resources to help manage the disaster, Texas Governor Greg Abbott declared a state of disaster in 31 Texas counties on Wednesday. In the past week, severe weather led to the death of 6 people.
All right, so anyway, that is what's going on out there. I'm looking for, I got the full recording of Clinton, the 38 minutes, but trying to see if there's just a little bit of a shorter clip here for you. All right, here we got a couple of them. And let's just see what we can get for you here. Have some responses to his visit. And here is from KRWG News, pardon me.
Clinton support.
Oops. And this is KRWG.
Who attended President Bill Clinton's rally say she's a candidate with a proven track record.
I'm supporting Hillary Clinton because I feel that she's the most qualified. She's ready for the job on day one. And I think overall that her policies are going to make America prosper, everyone prosper.
I think Hillary, you know, for as long as I've been alive, Hillary Clinton has been working to, you know, get things done, you know, in, you know, a high setting. Her husband, you know, who we're here to see today, you know, was president of the United States. I think they've got that experience in terms of actually making things happen. And so I think she's got the right ideas, the right principles, and the ability to make good things happen.
She has a proven track record, both with domestic and foreign policy, that I think can both expand and continue the legacy of President Obama.
She has spent her life breaking glass ceilings, whether it's through being a female lawyer in a traditional male-dominated field, all the way through Congress and its Secretary of State.
Even though I like Bernie Sanders' ideas, it's a dream. It's not going to happen. She's the only one that can make things happen. She knows Washington, D.C. She's been around everywhere, and she's been vetted for 20-something years.
Good Lord, I can't take this anymore. What exactly is Hillary going to deliver? The question kind of answers itself, a total disaster. All right, here's from your game last night, the Warriors versus LeBron James Cavaliers, and Warriors led by Stephen Curry. And I don't know, they're kind of blown out, the Cavaliers.
Here's from the NBA site. The 2016 NBA Finals. Two games will start at Oracle Arena, home of the defending champion Golden State Warriors, who will face the Cleveland Cavaliers in one of the most anticipated finals in NBA history. Nice entry pass to Bogut on the feed from Green. Nice backdoor, Barnes, and a foul. Some pretty passing from the front court of Golden State. First Green, and now Bogut. Green, alley up to Bogut.
But I like the strategy as...
Beautiful pass again from Iguodala. Curry, no room to shoot double team, so Livingston gets it, and it's a nice roll. 5 to shoot for Livingston. Pull-up jumper, Livingston again. He's 2 for 2. Barbosa off that.
All right, can't really follow this. Here, it's kind of weird. Modern play-by-play doesn't really exist anymore, so I really don't know what's happened to a commentary on sports, but all right, let's take a little break here and come back. I'll have you a little bit of that speech for you by Bill Clinton, because I know you'll be interested to hear how it started. 624 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450 and 805 6180 to text. We'll be right back. Stevie Ray Vaughan, I Couldn't Stand the Weather. Well, that video appears to have gone missing. I'll have to track it down. Anyway, 628. So we're at a transition point with the weather, and it's starting to feel a little bit warmer, and et cetera, et cetera. So it's just about to get hot, in other words, I think. And looking for what else. Yeah, I just had a 38-minute clip of the president. I don't know what happened to it, but can't blame it on the computer anymore. All right, so I had some stuff for you. All right, so there's this big story that came out that there were illegals being smuggled in here from the Middle East, weirdly enough, that they're taking them and flying them into the country, into Mexico or wherever, Central America. And then they're bringing them here, and they're actually supposedly pulling up the fence to bring them in here. It's a very weird story, but it's just one of those things that you've come to expect. And, you know, the first thing that came to mind is, I'm not making this up. The first thing that came to mind, the first thing I thought of is like Obama involved in this, you know, because it's just so weird. He's so enthusiastic about bringing people from the Middle East here against any common sense. And, you know, here's the thing with this president is he is totally immune to any criticism, and really the criticism isn't the issue. He's immune to any negotiations or any conversation on stuff. He makes up his mind on something, it's as if it came off of Mount Sinai chiseled into some stone tablets. So there's no getting his attention on anything, and it gives you the sense that you're just trapped. But anyway, here's a little bit from KGNS from Laredo, Texas.
A man is arrested for trying to smuggle illegal immigrants in a cloned Border Patrol Tahoe. Take a look at the vehicle in question. A Border Patrol agent noticed the Tahoe looked suspicious, so he followed the vehicle headed to Cotula. Agents stopped the Tahoe near the 65-mile marker of I-35. A total of 12 illegal immigrants were found crammed inside the Tahoe. The driver was arrested. The investigation is ongoing.
All right, so the story says a smuggling network has managed to sneak illegal immigrants from Middle Eastern terrorism hotbeds straight to the doorstep of the U.S., including helping one Afghan who authorities say was brought here as part of an attack plot in North America. Immigration officials have identified at least a dozen Middle Eastern men smuggled into the Western Hemisphere by a Brazilian-based network connected to the Mexicans who guided them to the U.S. border, according to initial reports. And those smuggling included Palestinians, Pakistanis, and an Afghan man. And those are just the ones that they know about. And the Afghan man was, quote, involved in a plot to conduct an attack on the U.S. and or Canada. He's in custody. And so some of them were nabbed before they came in. But, you know, the number of people that has stopped coming over the border is minute. And last year, two Mexicans who were part of the network had crawled under the border fence in Arizona last year, made it about 15 miles in bringing in these Middle Eastern people. So it's very, very, very strange. The mob took over in a Trump rally, and there's a few pictures of people that were pounded till they bled and hit with eggs in the face and such. So is absolutely weird. The attacks of the socialists. All right, let's take a little break here and come back. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to find this. Anyway, you know, Bill Clinton, you know what he sounds like. You're not missing anything, really. God bless him. He's kind of lost his edge. Kelly O'Connell, 633 AM, Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in, 805-6180 to text. We'll be right back. All right, so anyway, I've got some stuff on. I thought you might find it interesting. Maybe you are already over the death of Prince, but it's kind of a big deal. The guy wasn't that old when he died. So here is what killed Prince, the musician.
Prince's death has finally been revealed. Law enforcement officials tell the Associated Press the music legend died of an opioid overdose. The 57-year-old was found dead on April 21st at his Minnesota home. ET reached out to the Midwest Medical Examiner, who said there is, quote, nothing to share at this time. Investigators had been looking into whether the singer died of an overdose or if a doctor was prescribing him drugs leading up to his death. A week before his death, Prince's private plane was forced to make an emergency landing in Illinois, where he was taken to a nearby hospital. Reportedly, he was also scheduled to meet with an addiction specialist the day after his death.
Well, everybody knew he had kind of overdosed, but here's a little bit on fentanyl. What is it? This is from NBC News.
Country's heroin epidemic, and for years, heroin dealers have been using another, far more powerful drug to cut the heroin they sell. But now federal officials are expressing alarm that people are using that stronger drug, fentanyl, alone, leading to overdoses and deaths. Blake McCoy went to Ohio to find out more.
Jokester. He was the life of the party.
Evan Poitra was just 19 years old when his parents walked into his room in Grand Forks, North Dakota, and found him lying face down on his bed.
When I turned him over, he was already stiff, and his eyes were open. It'll be something I'll never get out of my head.
Evan's parents knew their son had been abusing marijuana and pain.
This is boring. It's 50 to 100 times stronger than heroin. That's all you need to know. All right, so take a little break here, and then I'm going to come back and tell you about these Trump rallies. And looking at the story that's going on in California, which is that Sanders is supposedly passed. Well, you know, I've got another story for you, too, that came up. There's a website that I go to sometimes that does Middle Eastern news, and they're asking if the U.S. should build an ISIS wall. And I'll tell you about that when we come back. 639, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. And it is the third day of June. So we'll be right back. All right, so there is this Middle East Forum, which has got a ton of great articles, meforum.org, if you want to go there. And so the question that they've put out here, which is kind of coextensive, it's come out basically the same time that this issue has come up, whether Middle Easterners are getting smuggled by Brazilian or Mexican, whatever, groups of people. If they could smuggle people in here, All right, we do have flooding in Texas that's pretty serious, and here is a little more about that. I played it some clips in the first hour, but we're picking it up a little bit from Fox News. There have been so many floods in Texas over the last year, year and a half, and now in the last month, there has, you know, Houston and that corridor between Houston and Dallas has just been inundated. So check this out.
You could say they've got a new round of severe thunderstorms bringing several inches of rain to parts of the region. The high water's leaving many, even the cows, trying to find some higher ground out there. Casey Stiegel, live in Richmond, Texas. What's going on there, Casey? How's it going?
Well, Martha, we've been talking to a lot of...
Little freeze up here, but I can tell you that it's just... more bad news, and it's between, say, 1 to 3 inches coming in now through most of Texas, or at least there's rain in most of Texas, and there is, especially in the Houston area on up towards Dallas, but that from San Antonio all the way over to Houston, we're talking about a lot of rain. So here's some more on the Fort Hood soldiers killed after truck flips. And
search and rescue operation is underway in Fort Hood, Texas, for six soldiers who went missing after the military truck they were traveling in overturned in a rain-swollen creek. Of the 12 soldiers in the vehicle, only half have been accounted for. The bodies of three soldiers were discovered downstream, while rescue crews were able to pull three soldiers to safety. High waters prompted officials to declare a state of disaster in 31 counties, and with rain showers expected over the weekend, locals can expect no respite from the floods.
All right, so we've got a little bit of a little bit of a report on the Donald Trump situation. Protesters left bleeding at Trump rallies, splattered with eggs, and it's getting pretty nasty. And so what do you think of in the second half of an hour, I'm going to play a little bit more on that fine-tuned universe that I put on the other day when who was it that didn't show? Jeff Steinborn didn't show up. So no call, no show. I just want to say one other thing about this. Why is it supposed to be a virtue to do a no call, no show? I mean, the thing that I don't understand the most about liberals is how they act like they're true liberals, act like they are above criticism, and what they do is absolutely pure. A liberal will say if they have the right motivation, they can do anything that they want. So Jeff Steinborn decides that he's too good for my show. He's better than it. To come in and breathe the air in the studio would pollute his body. So he decides that not only is he not going to show up, but to communicate to me that I'm really a nobody or the listeners are bozos, he's not going to let me know ahead of time. He's just going to no call, no show it. I don't get that. I mean, if you disagree with someone, that doesn't mean you have to denigrate them. You have to insult them. You have to be rude to them. I've never understood this. To me, is the most unattractive thing about liberalism is this fake superiority. We've got a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is David.
Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, I only caught bits and pieces of Paulo Martinez's interview yesterday.
Yeah.
But is he going to be coming back on?
Well, I mean the vote is in a couple of days, so.
Oh, okay, so that's like a primary thing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
What was your reaction?
Of his interview.
What was your reaction?
Some things.
I'm sorry, don't let me interrupt. But what was your reaction to his interview?
Well, like I was saying that. I felt like that he skirted, like I said, it was bits and pieces, but felt like he got away with some stuff. So I was just hoping he could get back on so I can call in and ask him some questions.
Did you, was there anything that you felt that he skirted on that you can recall?
I felt like that with his, first, I don't know if he said something about like small businesses, lower taxes. I just kind of know some things about the man that he's not genuine on this.
Oh, okay.
He belongs to some organizations, and so.
You know what organizations like they are?
He wasn't real honest. I'm sorry?
Can you mention what organizations he's in?
I'd kind of like to wait for that until he comes back.
He's not coming back before the election.
Okay. Well, he does belong to some organization, like an organization called La Raza.
Uh-huh.
And he's also a part of LULAC, which is kind of like a mild form. But he also has connections and ties to, if you would call, a D'Angelo Vega.
That.
He was a former sheriff of Mesilla, also with his history is that he used to work at the prison, Southern New Mexico Correctional Facility.
Right.
He basically was claiming that he retired, which I know people at the prison who saying that, no, he did not retire. He actually was claiming that he had PTSD, and he ended up quitting due to threats of a prison gang who had put what they call like a green light on him because of some decisions that he had made, which cost a person their lives. So it's just those type of things that I wish I would have been able to ask him about. I believe that that's something that's related to character. So that's all, basically.
All right, David. Well, thank you. Anything else?
No.
All right. Thanks for the call. Okay. Have a good day. Sounds serious. I don't know any about. I think he is a member of LULAC and La Raza. I think so, but I think I've heard that before. Whatever happened out at the prison, I have no idea about, though. So, but anyway, I was kind of going on. I don't mind if somebody decides they don't want to come on, but just communicate it to me say you're going to be somewhere on a public forum like this. And then to not show up. And here's the thing. It's just all of my experience with far leftism. And I consider Jeff Steinborn to be a far leftist. All of my experience informs me that when people do stuff like that, they think that they're doing God's work. If there was a God, they'd be doing God's work. Getting up in someone's speech and screaming at them to shut up, and that sit down and you don't have a right to speak, you're doing God's work. And I mean, it's just a complete contradiction of what America stands for and where we came from. And this idea that because you have the right political theory, therefore you can tell other people and command other people to not talk is nonsense. I mean, it's just clearly a complete rejection of free speech, but these people are going to show up to someone else's speech and shut it down because they have the right to control. People that are trying to talk don't have a free speech right. You know, it's just perverted. And I know that, this guy, the gay evangelist, Bill McCamley, is responsible for some of the bad blood, but Bill McCamley is an absolute disgrace. You know, he's the biggest backstabber I've met in this town to me. So anyway, let's take a break here. I'd like to see some of these people come on and describe what they're going to do, but we know what they're going to do. The people who are involved in this far leftism are of the same mindset as the Hancocks and the Billy Garretts, and it doesn't matter what they act like, because they, you know, the 1,000 different masks that they might wear, but inside their heart is the heart of Marxism, is communism, socialism, whatever you want to call it. We'll take a break here. 7:16. I've got an actual event involving a guy by the, I want to squeeze this thing in here. Let me come back and play this for you. But there is a guy by the name of Milo Yiannopoulos who is absolutely hilarious. He's a gay conservative freedom fighter against the political correctness. He's absolutely side splitting. We'll be back. I've got a little clip of his to play for you. So I've got this little clip from Trump, but all right. So I there's something that comes up all the time in my mind, and it is the elements of socialism, the accoutrements of Marxism and communism, all these things, this really bizarre set of ideas that is somehow, it's like alien. It's somehow figured out a way to live long beyond its usefulness, and it's popping up in my mind all the time. But we have a call here. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, it's Karen. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
I just wanted to say hallelujah that you're going to introduce people to Milo. I love Milo. He's. I just think he's amazing, and he just puts it out there. He's coarse, but, you know, that's what it takes. To deal with the youth today.
Yeah, well, that's what I was doing, is going back over the tape to mark down where he curses so I could block it. But here's the thing. We're this is what Trump has done in part, Trump has gone against the narrative in so many of these different ways that people are really unsettled by him. I think that's why they're fighting against him, because we have this this settled way of doing things and of approaching things, and now, you know, if you're gay, you're supposed to be a far left liberal. You're supposed to, fight for your rights and attack conservatives and all this business. And then you see this guy, Milo, who's an effeminate guy who's fighting to destroy political correctness because political correctness is this is it's this toxin, it's this poison that we drink in every day.
Yep, it is. Yeah. I spell his last name for folks so they can check him out, because I'm telling you, you know, brace yourself because he is coarse, but you really have to watch a couple of his videos and you'll be a huge fan.
Milo,
this is what it's going to take.
Milo Yiannopoulos. Yiannopoulos, Y-I-A-N-N-O-P-O-U-L-O-S. He's a Greek guy, or he's British, but he's of a Greek origin, like George Michael. But
yeah,
we've got to kill political correctness. It is political correctness is this hideous Trojan horse that brings in everything evil into society, and under the name of you know, everything is inverted in it.
It is. And you know what you were just talking about, when people check out Milo, it's the same thing with the left. They want free speech for them, for their views. But the minute they have anybody like Milo coming on campus, what is it? There's spawn threats. There's fits. There's letters saying please don't bring him. And it's awful. When people see what happens when he comes to campus, most times his shows are canceled because the pissy little students who can't take what he says. So it's all tied together, and he's doing a really good thing.
To play a clip of his.
Okay.
Thanks. All right. Bye-bye. All right. Leftism is it's a racket. It's a way to get people power who couldn't get it normally. And so what they do is they come in with this little set of rules, political correctness, and they attack other people. That's obviously why people are supporting Trump. You know, and they look at Hillary Clinton, and it's more political correctness or stupid feminism. I mean, you know, Hillary Clinton attacks women that have been and silences women that have been subjected to her husband's sexual abuse. But of course, Hillary's the greatest feminist in history. All right. Here's Milo Yiannopoulos. For too long has the bogus cult of social justice policed our lives. And this guy is graphic. I'm just going to have to blot out a couple of things he says. But he is at UCLA, and they tried to stop him from coming in, and they couldn't do it. Check it out.
Under 40, and I think the most important one, is that for them, cultural conservatism is gone. It's dead, and it's not coming back. These people rightly see the war on drugs as a mess, as a horrible disaster. They don't sort of religious conservatism that ran rampant in the 90s and blamed young people for things they weren't responsible for. And they don't much care for, you know, reactionary, if you like, conservative social values. They don't care about much of that stuff.
So really, this whole thing, you are just a reaction to the Christian right, in a way, right? You're saying, I don't care about gay marriage, I don't care about drugs. These aren't the issues that matter, but they push that for a long time, and then they birth you.
Well, I don't. No, I mean, no. I'm a creation, I suppose, if you want to demean me in that way. I suppose that you would call me a creation of the progressive left. I think I'm a necessary correction to the insanity on college campuses and in the media. There's no question whatsoever that American college campuses and the American media is infected with a disease, social justice. There's no question about it. And it may have started on your side, be propagated by people from your side. Are you responsible for this? The Young Turks? Were you ever talking about sort of? You ever on film complaining about sexism? Ever on film complaining about? I don't know. Anyway. I think that there's something very wonderful happening in politics. I think Trump is doing it. In media and on campuses, I think I'm doing it. In media, you're doing it too. Pushing back against the people who want to control what you say, what you think, what you do, who you read, what video games you play, what language you can use, how you can dress, who you can hang out with, that's over now. Yeah. It's not working anymore. It's all gone. And you can tell from the hysteria outside, you can tell from the furiousness of journalists at BuzzFeed and Gawker and Vike and Mike, Vox, whatever, all those terrible fucking places. You can tell they know the jig is up. You can tell from the atmosphere on campus. You just know, you know, these people it's starting to dawn on them. They're starting to get the message that saying, racist is not. not going to shut people up anymore. It doesn't shut me up. It doesn't shut anyone in this audience up. Now you.
I want to tell you something that happens during this. It's just a conversation up on a stage between two guys, one of which is Dave Rubin, and the other one is Milo Yiannopoulos. But at some point, these two girls, which are, I guess, a lesbian couple, jump up and run to the front of the stage and say, you're a hater. You're a hater. The kind of thing that shuts people down normally in our society instantly because nobody wants to be called a hater or a racist or a sexist or a homophobe or anything. And this guy just laughs in their face, and the audience actually turns against them when one of the girls finally says, I hate you. And then people start chanting, hate speech, hate speech. It's absolutely, it's spectacular. Here's a little more.
Got to come with facts. Because for too long, the bogus cult of social justice has policed people's lives. It has forced people to watch their speech. I mean, like, just think about it, you know. We'll talk about this a little bit in a minute, I think, but the death of Gorka and why I think it's a wonderful thing. And as a journalist, as a journalist, it's not very becoming of me to dance on the grave of any media publication in a time when it's so difficult to make ends meet and make anything worth it. But Gorka, more than any other publication, made people scared to make jokes. Ordinary private citizens were like, will a bored Gorka writer pick this up and ruin my life because I made a joke about AIDS? Mm-hmm. That's a sort of tyranny, and it's coming to an end. And the people who benefit from that tyranny, the mediocre, the lazy, the hateful, the fat, the facially pierced, the blue-haired, the people for whom being black is their only marketable skill.
Okay, a lesbian and her girlfriend are screaming, you're spreading hate because Milo Yiannopoulos said that there's this group of people out there whose only marketable skill is being black. And then these women jump up and run to the front of the stage to confront him and say they're spreading hate. And then there's a crowd that begins to form against them, and these two girls hold hands and start to walk out. But then they stop. The best part of the video is after they're confronted, they start laughing because it's like they understand the stupidity of the silliness of it.
You see, sweetheart, no one's buying what you're selling anymore. No one's buying what you're selling anymore.
What dreaming at these two girls, by the way, is build the wall.
There we go. If you put two groups down, you'll find an ice cream truck, don't worry. There's a humming. Did somebody wire a detonator? I feel a buzz.
All right, so you get the feeling of what happened there. It was what this guy does everywhere across the United States. He shows up to campuses and he fights against political correctness. Now, at the same time, you recall that these campuses, which are supposed to be bastions of learning and opening people's minds and getting them out of their parochial family and neighborhood small town biases in filling their minds full of knowledge and challenging them to think in different ways. You've got across America campus codes to control speech. And that's what this guy's fighting against. And I think he's pretty compelling to listen to. All right. here is a little break here. 7:31 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 and 805-6180 to text, and we'll be right back at 7:32 on the 3rd of June. And for your temperature outside, we have 63 degrees. Be right back. All right, 7:36. 7:36, and we'll get you out of this political mentality. We had talked before about the fine-tuned universe. Now, there's a guy by the name of Leonard Susskind, and he is the Felix Bloch or Bloch Professor of Physics at Stanford University, and he has written some books, including Cosmic Landscape, String Theory, and the Illusion of Intelligent Design. So there's a number of theorists out there who admit that the universe does kind of look fine-tuned, but that it's all a hoax. So check this out. And this is from a website.
Leonard, what is
Closer to Truth?
What is it about the fine-tuning of this universe that causes such energy, such controversy among scientists, philosophers, theologians? Everyone today is talking about fine-tuning. Why?
Well, it seems, I don't completely understand why, that the laws of physics, laws of cosmology, laws of how the universe evolved seem to be very special. Of course they're special. Everybody would expect them to be special, but they're special in a way that's unexpected. They seem to be special in the way that is just very, very conducive to our own existence. Laws of physics could have been very different. You could imagine a world that didn't have electrons in it. There's nothing wrong with that in the basic theory of the mathematical theory of physics. You could just throw away the electron. What would happen if you threw away the electron?
No chemistry.
No atoms, no chemistry, no biology, no people to ask the question. We just wouldn't be here to ask the question. You could change the rules in other ways. You could make gravity stronger. Gravity is very, very weak. You know, normal people think gravity is very strong. When I wake up in the morning, especially the older I get, the harder it is to get out of bed.
Yeah.
So I think, oh boy, wouldn't it be nice if there wasn't much gravity? Well, in fact, gravity really is very, very weak. If you were to compare in an atom, the gravitational force between the electrons and protons compared to the electrical force, the gravitational force is completely negligible. Why is gravity so much weaker than the other forces? Well, we don't really know, but here's what we do know. If it were just even a little bit stronger, stars would burn out too quickly. They wouldn't live long enough for life to evolve. Instead of stars, instead of galaxies, we'd have black holes. We can't live in a black hole. I mean, you know, science fiction, maybe you can live in a black hole, but we can't really. Most likely, the universe would expand and contract too rapidly. And so everything seems to be almost on a knife edge, that if you were to change the rules of physics, the laws of physics, even a little bit, the world as we know it wouldn't exist.
How many of these constants or laws of physics would fit into this category of fine-tuning, where it has to be on a knife edge or close to that?
There's debate about that. There's debate about just how sharp the knife edge is. Now, almost everything, if you changed it very much, the electric charge of the electron, the mass of this or that particle, various constants of nature, how strong gravity is. If you changed it by a few percent, 10%, some of them 20%, some of them 30%, you would really be in trouble. The universe wouldn't look as it does.
Are we dealing with a couple of dozen?
We're dealing with a couple of dozen.
Yeah.
We're dealing with a couple of dozen, order of magnitude, a couple of dozen constants.
All right, let's talk about one of them, though, that has some particular strangeness to it, the so-called cosmological constant.
That's right. That's the one which is really on a knife edge. Okay, it is on such a narrow knife edge that it's almost inconceivable. If you were to change it just the tiniest, tiniest bit, we couldn't be here. This cosmological constant is almost a kind of anti-gravity. It's a kind of repulsive force that's implicit in Einstein's equations for general relativity. It could be there. Physicists had every reason, theoretical reason, not experimental reason, theoretical reason to think that the world should have this kind of anti-gravity. Anti-gravity would cause everything to separate at an enormous rate, repulsion. The actual magnitude of it is incredibly small. It is so tiny that the anti-gravity force is only felt on the largest possible scales in the universe. It takes an enormously large space and volume and time for the cosmological constant to create any real repulsion. This is not because the mathematics tells us that. This is just because for some unknown reason, this constant, whatever made the universe, I hate to say whoever you made the universe, physicists have a habit of talking in that language, whoever made the universe. They don't really mean it. But whoever made the universe made it with an incredibly small, tiny cosmological constant. It is so small that it is 0.00000. We can sit here for a while. 123 of them.
And then a one.
And then a one. I think it's actually a two.
Yeah.
But it is incredibly small, and nobody really knows why. The one thing that we do know is that if it were very much stronger, it would have blasted apart the galaxies. It would have prevented stars from forming. So you have to understand, galaxies and stars and planets formed because gravity pulled them together in the very early universe. This counteracting anti-gravity could have prevented that, could have prevented the formation of stars, planets, and so forth. So if it were just a little bit bigger, just a little bit bigger than this 0.00000000, it would have prevented our existence.
All right, let's take a break here. Pretty interesting though, huh? Now they say when the Big Bang happened, there was this, I guess you would say, explosion, except they don't like to call it an explosion because there was no space for an explosion to happen into. It was an explosion in which space itself was created, according to the theory. But we'll come back and listen to a little bit more of this by this guy, Leonard Susskind. He's very easy to follow. But the argument is the fine-tuned universe, there are hundreds of variables in the different forces out there and the nature of the solar system and universe, the galaxies and everything, that if you were to change even one of them would make life impossible. And that's what the debate is about. 743 Kelly O'Connell AM, Las Cruces, 1450 KOB, 523-1450 to call in, and 805-61802 text.
Yeah, I just wanted to get the name of that Milo guy that you were, that he sounds interesting.
Yeah, Milo Yiannopoulos. So Yiannopoulos.
Holy cats. Why? What was it again?
Well, just look up Milo. Trust me, look it up on Milo Political Correctness on the internet. You will have no problem finding him.
Okay, I'll do that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Bye-bye. Hey, this is Kelly.
Hi, Kelly. I want to just tell you something off air, okay? I don't want to get on the air.
Hey, wait, hold on. This is getting recorded on Blog Talk Radio. So did you want me to get your number or do you want to say it on, I don't know who listens to the Blog Talk Radio, but just let you know.
Okay, it doesn't matter. Okay. So in the Bible, in the Hebrew Bible, in Genesis, there's a term, it's Sivrat HaKa'alim. And what basically how the rabbi explained it to me many, many years ago is that how you just said there was no, or that guy was saying there was space. Well, Sivrat HaKa'alim means he sucked in to make space. And when he let it out, it was like your Big Bang Theory. So right there in the Bible, right there in Genesis.
Wow. Okay. Could you explain that one more time? That when God was doing the Big Bang, that He made space for it to happen in?
Yeah, because there was nothing but God, nothing but God. So He sucked in the Hebrew, you know, that is the word for it. He inhaled.
Oh, interesting.
To make room, to make the space.
Wow.
And then when He let it out, that was like the Big Bang, that, you know, and then
wow,
you have the rest of the thing. But isn't that interesting?
Absolutely fascinating. I'd love to find the book that described that.
Just to any learned Jew,
okay,
or rabbi,
all
and
right,
they can explain that term.
And what was the term one more time?
It's words. It's Sivrat HaKa'alim. Now, I might be saying it a little bit off, you know. My Hebrew's not that great.
Right.
Okay.
Fantastic. Thanks for the call. Very interesting.
Okay.
Have a nice weekend. Okay. Bye-bye. Okay, got a couple of interesting phone calls, and a lady called up to say that in the Hebrew Bible, describing the creation, that the Hebrew Bible says, obviously, in Hebrew, in the Old Testament, that God sucked in his breath, I guess, and then exhaled, and that is descriptive of having created space, that there was nothing but God that existed. Now, one of the interesting things, and I mentioned this, but I'd still, obviously you can't get your head around it. So, you know, just to travel to Mars would be, I think, you know, the question, you couldn't live long enough to travel to Mars, right? I mean, I'm trying to remember, but anyway, anyway, it's years and years to get to Mars. I'll have to look that up now because I'm sure I've misstated it, but the universe is so vast and it's mostly full of space. And they talk about dark energy and everything, dark matter. But the universe is 100 billion galaxies, each one having on average 100 billion stars. But some of them have hundreds and hundreds of billions or trillions of stars. So it's just mind-boggling. And this is information we found out about a century ago from this guy that had done the research, and he noticed that some stars were different in color. And the coloring had something to do with how far away they were. And Hubble, he was kind of an amateur, I guess. But then you say that the universe is about 1/250th. The visible universe that we've seen is 1/250th of the whole universe. So the universe is, for practical purposes, infinite. So anyway, here's a little bit more of this gentleman, Leonard Susskind, who does not believe in God, but cannot explain why the universe is finely tuned.
Physicists have never understood why it's so small. And
okay,
that is the sharpest part of this knife edge.
Okay, we have fine tuning. We've got to deal with it. Now, there are a number of ways that we can explain that. I mean, it cries out for explanation.
Yes.
We cannot say, oh, yes, fine, and let's go on. We have to explain it one way or another.
Basically, there are three explanations.
Okay. Number one.
Okay. God.
Number two. that one I understand.
Right. Accident.
Okay.
Right.
That strains credulity just right. by on its face value.
Right.
So it's right. an accident just that way, and it happens to work out perfectly.
Right. 123 decimal places, zero, not likely to be an accident. Well, there's a fourth way.
Well, third.
I didn't
you want to
let me put the fourth way in before I get to the third.
Yeah.
The fourth way is, who knows, maybe someday somebody will figure it out.
Oh, sure. There is one ultimate
right.
solution. All
right.
of these constants of nature can be devolved
maybe
down
somebody
to a,
will
to
figure
a fundamental
out
equation that
some
will
fundamental
express
equation.
All of these
right.
as derived from
but that. But that would partly fall into the category of accident. You take some fundamental equation and you solve it. It would take an incredible accident for it to have a solution which was all that small. The last way, which physicists don't like, they don't like it because it runs against their ambitions. The ambition was to explain every constant, every number, to understand everything about the universe. The other way goes as follows. The universe is enormously big. We know that, incidentally. And when I say enormously big, I don't mean like we used to think 10 billion light years. I mean 10 to the 10 to the 10 to the 10th. We have no idea how big it is. Enormously big. We suspect that it is very much bigger than the region we can see. We also have reason to believe that it's diverse, that that in different places it has different properties. There's good theoretical reason to believe that in some places maybe there is no electron. In other places, gravity is stronger. And in some places, this cosmological constant may be much bigger. The picture is that there's some very small fraction of the universe where the conditions just happen to be right for the existence of life. And it's not a surprise. That's where life is. It's more or less like asking, why do we, by accident, happen to live on a planet which happens to be at just the right temperature for liquid water to exist? That's a narrow range. Not as narrow, it's not as much of a knife edge as the cosmological constant. Why is that? Well, the answer is very simple. On planets where there can't be water, there can't be life. So it's true, a very small fraction of the planets in the universe are at the right temperature for water to exist. Where do we live? We live in the only place we can live, where water exists. Same kind of picture. Universe very big, very diverse, many different environments, a huge, huge slew of different possibilities. And among these possibilities, in a few small pockets of the universe, conditions are right for life, and that's where life exists.
With planets, we know that there are large numbers of planets where yes. a small number would be in the habitable zone where we have liquid water, and the vast majority are not. We have that. With universes, we are relying upon theoretical ideas to
That's
say
right.
there are different bubble universes, pocket universes,
yes.
Inflation theory, chaotic internal inflation, creating different situations, each one of which has different laws. So we need to have that step.
That's right. We need not only to have a vast number of possibilities. Possibilities are like blueprints. Right? They're blueprints for different kinds of universes. I like to think of the possibilities as the possibilities analogous to the possibilities of life. DNA is the blueprint for life. DNA has a vast number of ways of being rearranged. And so there's a vast number of possibilities for life. But that in itself doesn't say that there are a vast number of living creatures around. It took something to make those blueprints into actual houses
right.
or whatever it happens to be. So part of the story is cosmological, that the expansion of the universe, the what you called inflation of the universe, the very, very rapid expansion that took place at very, very early times, created a lot of quantum fluctuation. And that quantum fluctuation created patches of space with different properties. Those patches are sometimes called pocket universes, or sometimes called bubble universes. But we live in one of them. That's the picture. That's the picture. There's mathematics that goes with it. And for those of us who believe in this particular picture of a tremendously diverse, some people call it a multiverse,
You like Megaverse?
I like Megaverse. And as I said in my book, the reason I like Megaverse has nothing to do with any ideology. Multiverse just reminds me of multiplex cinemas, which I don't like. I like small movies. Right.
You actually coined this term landscape
I did. But there was a background. And the background comes from biology. The landscape of biological designs. And it means all the possible ways you could put DNA together. It's a tremendously large number of possibilities describing life. Biologists have used the term landscape, and I was kind of borrowing it from biology. All the various possible ways you could put the elements of physics together to make different kinds of universes, different kinds of pocket universes. So I did coin it in the context of physics, but as I said, it had a prehistory as the landscape in biology.
So the answer to the fine tuning, as you would frame it, would be this landscape of possibilities populated by
a multiverse, or I'm sorry, a megaverse of actualities. But there is one element to it that's extremely important. Just as the number of ways that you can rearrange a DNA molecule is enormous, you have a DNA molecule with a billion base pairs in it. You know, the base pairs are the rungs of the ladder. You can rearrange them in a humongous number of ways, and that's why there are so many different possibilities for life. It's important not only that the universe has this fluctuation in it, which creates different environments, but it's important that the number of possibilities, the number of different blueprints, is enormous. And that's where string theory came into it. String theory, somewhat to the chagrin of those who invented it, produced...
Including myself, produced
this huge, huge number of possible ways of arranging its elements to create an enormous diversity of possibilities. This was not something that the string theorists had been looking for. They wanted to find a unique possibility for the universe, which would be just like ours, and more or less by accident, just have the properties that life could exist in. That's not the way the theory evolved. The theory evolved instead to create this tremendously big number of possibilities, different ways of rearranging it, just like different ways of rearranging DNA, produced an enormous number of ways of making a universe. Some very, very small fraction of those ways would be conducive to the existence of life. So as I think you're getting at, two things are necessary: a huge number of possibilities and a way of populating those possibilities to create environments of all different kinds.
All right, that's the end of the interview. But in other words, how the universe got here and how human beings evolved, according to the scientists, is explained, and in the finely tuned Goldilocks universe is explained by having an incredibly large number of possibilities that happen to play out on their own. And eventually you come up with an accident based on this incredible amount of potential outcomes, all of which are kind of getting worked out. In other words, it's sheer luck, and you have to have a multiverse or a megaverse or string theory to explain how something so finely tuned and so apparently designed and built by a powerful mind and organizing principle happened by accident. Anyway, 7:59, Kelly O'Connell, AM Massachusetts, 1450 KOBE. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend. We'll be back in 2 days. Have a wonderful rest. Ciao. Hey, it's Kelly. It's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly. Hey, this is Jesse. I got a question for you real quick.
All right.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Hey, you know, when I've been listening to your program for a while, and, you know, sometimes I want to call in, but I'm a little shy.
Okay.
But I've been thinking about, you know, how you have your liberalism, and then you have your radical Islam.
Yeah.
And they're pretty much along the same lines. You could almost say they're kind of like brothers with each other. One's more radical than the other.
I wrote an article on this.
Say again?
I wrote an article about this.
Oh, then I'd love to read it, because in a sense what happened, you know, both ideologies, if they don't like what you say, they try to cut you off no matter what.
They try to kill you.
Yeah.
Look at all the people they killed even though we tend to see radical Islam as more dangerous, they killed the liberalism. Marxism has killed more people than Islam. They killed Mao killed 77 million. Stalin killed 74 million. Lenin killed tens of millions. We're talking almost 200 million people that were killed because something about liberalism.
Yeah. That's interesting. I never knew those numbers were there. It surprises me is that the Democratic Party is infiltrated with all this liberalism, and a lot of Democrats they don't see the difference. It's kind of like, you know, yeah, it's okay for them to do that. It's okay for, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So my wondering is, why isn't the Democrats, you know, real Democrats, allow those liberals to really, you know, control their party?
That's a great question, but I almost every liberal that I've ever known, if I asked them if they were a socialist, they'll say no. And then I'd start naming the elements of socialism, and I say, do you believe in all these things? They'll say yes. So it's kind of a mystery, but.
Oh, that's interesting. That's probably why Steinborn didn't come back, or he didn't show up, because, you know, he could be revealed that he's a socialist, that he's that kind of person.